All right. Apparently, irregardless is a word, everybody. Ryan in Kitchener-Waterloo / Toronto. And another individual who didn't sign their name said that irregardless is a real word. Oh, no, it was Chad in Peterborough, too. Wow.
Oh, then we got to take it as... We got to take that word.
Yeah. Irregardless is a word.
For his word.
And apparently he did use it correctly. It does sound like counterintuitive. It's like irregardless, regardless. I think they mean the same thing.
When he used it didn't make sense.
Oh, Chad said he was using it in the correct context.
Well, I'm not going to argue with Chad.
You know, you're the big linguistics guy.
That didn't fit. That word didn't fit itself into much copy from me.
Are you going to cause a melee over it?
Melee, I would use routinely.
Yeah, text line, you know, we had lots of callers. We had to let some go, but text line still voicing a lot of their fire.
When the text line becomes the phone line, it's not eye-opening. It's just like it's a different world when it goes from text to spoken word.
Speaking of spoken word, we're about to talk to Luke Fox, NHL reporter for Sportsnet, who was on the infamous West Coast road trip of doom, the haunted horrors of the West Coast. Luke, how's it going this morning?
Oh, it's going okay. Trying to catch up from West Coast time and the candy rush of taking my kid trick-or-treating last night, but doing pretty well.
I'm sure the body is highly confused after the jet lag and sugar rush. So you wrote an article over the weekend that got a lot of traction, justifiably so. And within that, your focus, I guess, when it comes to the issues with this team has shifted to Kyle Dubas. So I wonder at what point did it hit you over the head that the team that the general manager built just wasn't good enough?
Well, I started to think about it. It was swelling during that trip. And I started thinking about it after the Kings game. And Morgan Riley came out and said, you know what? The game against the Anaheim Ducks is going to be a character test for us. Now's a chance to show our character, to show what we're made of. We need to respond. And I'm thinking, it's game 10 of the season. Things are so tense that you have the longest serving Leaf saying, we need a character win against the worst team in hockey right now, a team that only has one win, a team that's probably more fragile than you, a team that's built to lose. Like, the GM is building the Ducks so that they get in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes. Kyle Dubas is building the Leafs so that they win a Stanley Cup. That's the vision, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, how did we get this far? And just watching this team play, I'm one of probably only a few people that has seen all 10 of these games live and in person that doesn't work for the team, right? And it feels different than last year. Last year, you know, there were some uneven performances for sure, and things were tense on that road trip where they went through Pittsburgh and got shelled by, you know, a really depleted Penguins roster. Things looked better in Carolina, but they lost. And then things were going south in Chicago, and they turned it around and beat a really bad Blackhawks team. And then they got their traction and went on a roll. And Sheldon Keefe agrees, this feels different because they've looked bad in all these losses. And then when you step back and look at the context, the teams they've lost to aren't very good. The Vegas Golden Knights, of all the teams they've played, that to me looked like the most organized, well-coached, had the most talent. That looked like a real team. No shame in losing to them. And you know, every team's going to have some off nights. It's okay to lose a game. But to lose a game and kind of be full value for those losses and deserve all those losses against the Ducks and the Sharks and the Coyotes and the Canadiens, and have people come out and say, we need to respond, to see the coach kind of pulling at every string possible, trying different lineups, taking guys in and out of the lineup, using anger, using encouragement. It feels so tense, and I'm looking at the group, and I feel like this is a weaker group. I don't know if they're as good as they've been in the last couple of years. In the last couple of years, they haven't got out of the first round, but I don't think there's an encouraging enough signs in the roster. I don't see an Andre Kasha. I don't even see a Jason Spezza. I certainly don't see an Ilya Mikheyev. And the blue line looks really depleted. and the goalie plan is already going south. It's not the plan to have Eric Schallgren start three times in 10 games.
Mm-hmm. In that roster, when looking at that roster, it is the most quote-unquote Kyle Dubas that this team has ever been. What do you think the team has lost as Dubas's influence has grown?
Well, I mean, I think if you're going to be hired to do a job, to be the GM, you should try and follow your vision to get a team to the point where it looks like you want it to look. And I think to that point, I think he's done a good job. Like, I think he had his idea was investing in four big guys, trying to save money on the fringes, trying to pick out the Michael Buntings, the Cashes, find guys from Europe, have these role players that make an influence and provide more value than their cap hit's worth. And if that's the vision he's following, I think he's done a good job at, you know, adjusting his plan. Like, Nick Ritchie's not working. Okay, well, maybe I can get Lyubushkin. It may cost me a pick, but I can adjust my plan. I don't think he's a bad GM. I believe, and I know there's people that will argue against me, but I believe the vision is flawed. I think he's built a team starting with the offense and thinking about defending secondary. So that's four big forwards, a very great, talented offensive defenseman, and then it's fill in the fringes. And then it's scramble and say, okay, what's the goalie market look like now? Who can we grab? How can we fill in on the defense? And I just don't think there's enough there. I think you need to be a little bit more balanced. I think you need to invest in some more top four defensemen. I think one of the big flaws is you have guys trying to punch above their weight class. A guy like Justin Hall, I don't see him as a top four defenseman. And that's not a knock on the kid. I think he's trying. But I think he's just been asked to do too much. I think he's probably a third-pairing defenseman. I think Rasmus Sandin and maybe Timothy Liljegren, you know, coming off surgery, I think in a perfect world, they're probably still three third-pair defensemen on a contender. Like, that's the thing. This is all through the lens of they're trying to win a Stanley Cup right now because Dubas' contract is online, because Matthews is due an extension. You know, if you just want to be a playoff team, like if you're the Ottawa Senators or someone like that, and you're just trying to be a decent team, that no problem. But I'm talking about building a team that's built to win a cup. I think you need defensive depth, and I think there's a real issue with the bottom six at this point.
If you look at the player that Brendan Shanahan was himself, does it surprise you that he signed off on this version of the Toronto Maple Leafs and the creation of the roster composition?
A little bit, yeah. There's definitely a disconnect, right? This is the guy that went out and got Gordie Howe hat tricks and stood up for his teammates at every single chance in a physical way, grinded out, an incredible career, and blended that whole will with skill. And that balance seems off. So, yeah, maybe they can adjust. Maybe they can bring some guys in. And the unfortunate thing is one of the guys that kind of fits that mold, Jake Muzzin, is injured, and no one has any clue when or if he's going to be back. So that hurts them. They brought in kind of more rugged type of guys to try and supplement that. Like, I give them credit with the Lyubushkin addition last season, Zach Bogosian, but those guys aren't there anymore. I guess Jordy Benn was supposed to be the cost-effective replacement for that, but he got hurt in camp, and I'm sure we'll see him in the lineup now that he's wrapping up his conditioning stint with the Marlies. But I just think there's not enough of that. There's not enough of that element. And, you know, God bless him, but Wayne Simmonds and Kyle Clifford they're not at that stage in their career. They're trying. And, you know, it's the right type of attitude, but I just don't think there's enough there at this point.
How tough is the power dynamic or the relationship if one were to BS to be like, okay, so the text line everybody wants says get rid of Keefe, or, you know, you need to get rid of one of them. But they seem to be almost like a package deal in a sense, or Dubas and Keefe. Like, how do you view this hierarchy if there is a decision to move off of somebody? How tricky that situation will be, because there is a relationship and there is a tie between all of these, and these decisions seem to be a little bit harder for us to analyze with the fact that there is this power struggle at times.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's a power struggle, but there's an interesting power dynamic where everyone's linked, right?
Yeah.
Like, Brendan Shanahan had a choice of Mark Hunter, Lou Lamoriello, Kyle Dubas. He chose Kyle Dubas. Kyle Dubas, when it came time to get rid of Mike Babcock, to my knowledge, he didn't even interview anyone else. It was always going to be Sheldon Keefe. It's Sheldon Keefe. He's been his guy forever. He stayed loyal to him. He stayed loyal to him after, you know, in my mind, Keefe has done a great job as a rookie head coach in the NHL. I really like him. I think he's done a lot of good things, a lot of creative things. But I also think that in three postseason appearances, he's been the second best coach in a series that he's lost. So there were a lot of really interesting and qualified free agent coaches after the Tampa loss. There was Bruce Cassidy. There was Pete DeBoer. There is, and still is, Barry Trotz. There's Rick Tocchet. There's some pretty intriguing names out there. And Kyle Dubas was asked about that, and he said, you know what? No, I'm not even interested in talking to them. Sheldon Keefe's my guy. As a matter of fact, in a few years, you're going to be looking at Sheldon Keefe in the same light as some of those names you just mentioned. That's what he said at the press conference at the end of the year. So he's very tied and very loyal to Sheldon Keefe. They want to call their cup together. They see hockey quite similarly. You know, they're on the same page, which was unlike the dynamic between Dubas and Babcock. So I don't think there's a power struggle there. But what's going to happen if things continue to go south, right? Like, if they get on a winning streak and they beat a tired Flyers team on, who's going to come in on a back-to-back here Wednesday, maybe they're going to get up for that big Saturday against Boston, which is going to be the best team they've played this year. If they start stacking wins, this will quiet down. But if another losing streak kicks up, you have to wonder if Dubas is questioning, do I have to make a move and fire my good friend and a guy I trust just to save the season? Because I'm worried, you know, is he losing Mitch Marner? Like, all these questions. Is he out of answers for how to get this roster that I've provided with him going? Does he get to that point, or is he so loyal and dedicated to keep that it takes someone higher up to say, it's either you or him? So I think that's – but right now, there's no sign that he isn't going to be loyal to this coach. He has been, and he's proven it.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'm in lockstep with you, Luke, in that I believe that Sheldon Keefe is a really, really good coach. I think he can be a really, really good coach in this league, but he has been outcoached previously. And now he faces the most difficult situation where it seems like he might be dealing with and grappling with the room. And it doesn't matter how good of a coach you are. If you lose the room for whatever reason, you're kind of screwed. Like, you really have no other, you don't really have any recourse. You can't really do anything about it unless someone picks you over some star player or a group of star players. So he's facing that reality where it seems like he's got to turn this thing around, or the only safety net he has is the fact that he has this relationship with Kyle Dubas. One thing that I don't have to tell you this, but there are certain individuals when you're around the Leafs that you would seek out for truths. Like, Morgan Rielly's an example. You already mentioned him. Jake Muzzin would be one of those guys as well. But I feel like the most truths right now when it comes from the Maple Leafs is coming from the body language and demeanor of Mitch Marner. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, and not just him. You know, so when you're traveling on the road, you get a bit of a better feel for the body language and the feel of the group, because when they're at home, they have their pretty expansive dressing room, and they have dressing rooms behind the dressing room, and they can kind of hide more. But when you're on the road, the visiting team doesn't have as big of area to move about. So you see little things, like you see Sheldon Keefe pull Rasmus Sandin into a room for a one-on-one meeting. You walk in the hallway and you turn your head, and then you see him sitting Pierre Engvall down, and he's going over video. Like, this coach is trying everything he can. And you also see the players, and they're just kind of hanging out more. And the body language, the vibe, the mood around this team is tense. I'm not saying that the guys lost the room. Winning breeds, you know, good vibes and good feelings, and it's not there right now. And Auston Matthews was talking about it. He's like, we need to get some positive energy going. And I think when it comes to the room, they're really missing Muzzin, who's, you know, was there for a few games, but he's up in the press box. He's not putting on gear with the guys. He's not even skating. They really miss his settling voice and hard dose of reality. And the other guy they're really missing is Jason Spezza. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, like I'm a huge Spezza fan. I have all the time in the world for him. And I know that was a really difficult choice for him to retire. And he was still traveling with the team. And he actually brings a bit of a lightness to the management group when he's around them. And I really appreciate that, actually. But I think they're really missing Spezza in that room. I think it's a good thing that Simmons is with the team. I think he brings a lot of positivity, but his voice can't carry as much when he's in and out of the lineup all the time. So there is a bit of a weird dynamic where someone has to take control of it. Because when Mitch is feeling like in a good mood, that is very contagious. The problem is if Mitch has his head down and isn't feeling good, that can also be contagious.
Isn't part of the problem that Tavares seems to be someone that isn't making that impact? He's the captain of your team. He's been one of, you know, the most consistent players. If you're looking for a little bit of a core four positive right now, if your best players aren't also leading vocally or just...
And best players that are wearing the letter.
Yes.
Like, there's a responsibility when you're the captain of the mm-hmm. Toronto Maple Leafs. And if something is broken between coach and player, like, there should be some culpability.
And I'm not hearing that. And maybe you're seeing it because you're there, but I'm not hearing it in the way that it's spoken to the media. And that's kind of how we get the pulse of the team, right? It's like, oh, you know, we need to do better, and not just like, well, we're working on it, we're getting there. Like, we got to bring the energy up. Is that what you see when you're on the road?
Well, John Tavares is who he is, right? And they've known who he is, and he hasn't really changed who he is. And it's really admirable, the fact that he's so even keel and steady, but you're right in the fact that he's not the rah-rah type of guy. He's not dragging this team. And the dynamic's a bit odd in that Tavares, I think, is smart enough to recognize that he's no longer the best player on his hockey team. You know, he was that on the Islanders. And he kind of defers a little bit to Matthews, even though Matthews has the A and Tavares has the C. But... by the same token, this core has been together a long time. This room should run itself. I don't know if it should fall on one guy. I think that's kind of a story that fans sometimes envision in their heads. Like, there's one captain and everyone follows their lead. John Tavares leads by, you know, setting an example in terms of always answering the questions after tough games. It sets the example in terms of keeping his body in shape and working out. And really, he's been one of their most consistent forwards. You know, maybe you want to argue a guy like maybe David Camp or something, but he's given a pretty good, hard, honest effort every night. He just doesn't have any more the elite, you know, supernatural skill of a Marner and Matthews. So the dynamic's a bit odd, I think, because he's not the superstar. He's not the Hart Trophy winner. But at the same time, I'm thinking there should be enough guys with experience. This is 7 years now, right, into the Marner, Matthews, Nylander era, and Riley's been there longer. There should be enough guys in there that room should run itself, and they should want to do it for their own pride it shouldn't really matter what if they're a little bit ticked off at the coach or tired of that voice. They should want to run this. You know, the GM has been loyal to this group.
I think you nailed it with Tavares and the realization that he's not quite the player that he used to be, or at least he's, you know, second in command when it comes to this core group. Like, he is, I think that's been a key to his season and the start that he's had, making slight adjustments and doing what he can do and control what he can control. However, I do think there is a responsibility there. Like, if there is friction between coach and players, if there's one superstar who's clearly feeling the frustration of the start of the season, which is Mitch Marner. Like, it's undeniable that he's going through something right now. They can't just stand around and think, okay, let's just try to play through this one. Let's get the vibes up. Like, there needs to be some serious conversations, and there needs to be a bridge between coach and superstar players. And I feel like, you know, I don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but I can probably surmise that John Tavares isn't in there rah-rah and demanding that things change. But that's, again, that might just be me, and that might not be reality.
Well, we don't know. Like, I don't want to speculate on that.
Yeah,
because
that's fair.
Like, who knows what meetings Keith and Tavares have had, or the three of them. We don't know. I mean, that's speculation. But you're right. You're right. I agree that the captain's job should be to bridge the coaching staff's, you know, vision and alignment and getting the players on board. I do agree with you there. But it's just speculation because we don't know what sort of conversations they've had.
Last one for you, Luke. I appreciate your time after that sugar crash. Austin Matthews' future is obviously, you know, in the backdrop of this entire season. July 1, he can start negotiating terms on a new contract. How much does that, the specter of that, factor into all the decisions that may or may not be made here with either Keefe or Dubas or Superstar Core or Shanahan? Where does that, is that like the most powerful factor in all this? The fact that Austin Matthews needs to sign a contract on July 1, or the speculation really truly ramps up?
Yeah, no, it's there and you can feel it. And Austin Matthews has had some soft shifts too, right? And Sheldon Keefe hasn't benched him. You know, I think everyone is very aware in those quarters, the Austin Matthews situation. And Austin has, you know, from his perspective, he has to think about this roster and this vision too. I mean, he has his individual hardware. He has two Rockets. He goes to every All-Star game. He has a Hart and a Ted Lindsay. He has a bunch of club records. Like, at this point, you know, and I do believe that he wants to be team first. He wants some team success. That's something that's eluded him. So he's going to have a decision in the next couple of years about whether he thinks this is the team to win. It's going to be the team that's going to pay him the most money. That's not the point. He has to think, like, do I believe this team can win? So that is looming in all these decisions, in the next coaching decision, in the next trade decision, all of that. Just the same as it would be and should be in Edmonton with Leon and Connor. Like, when you have talents of that caliber, they're going to wield influence, even if they're not saying anything. You just know you have to keep them happy because you want them to be part of the franchise. He's the face of the Leafs right now.
I think one of the frustrating parts of being a Leafs fan right now is seeing, as you mentioned, like a Connor McDavid single-handedly willing his team to victories night after night. Multiple hat tricks. He's putting up multiple point performances, and it looks like at times when that team doesn't have it, he has been a consistent guy. He's now leading the Hart Trophy odds by a lot, and it's a very different atmosphere
Rocket
here.
Rocket Richard too.
Yep. Yeah. It's a much different atmosphere when those two are always head and head in comparison. Is there something that you have seen in terms of why Matthews have just had a bit of a slower start? I think maybe a week or two ago we had this conversation. It was like, oh, it's early. Well, I don't know if it's still early. Are you a little bit more confident that there will be that turnaround?
Yeah, well, he got a couple goals on the road trip, right? And that kind of flew under the radar because of all the losses. And it's you know, it's not the story that Austin Matthews scored a couple times. But it definitely, you could see the emotion on him when he hit that one-timer. from the point on the power play. And it was like, oh, okay, that's the Austin Matthews we've seen before. But before that, I'm seeing a guy who's not getting enough to the inside. And I think he would tell you that himself, that he's had to be pushed to have more of an attack mentality is one phrase that he used. Little things like it seemed like a bit more missed shots, like just missing the net entirely, fumbling a couple pucks that normally he wouldn't. And maybe part of that is like in his head, he's trying to wrap his brain around, we got a whole other 82 games to slog through until we get to what really matters. So maybe part of it's that. Maybe part of it is, physical. He says he's fine, but he got pretty abused in that Dallas game. You just wonder if there's some bumps and bruises that we don't know about. Little things like that. And then everything swells, right? Like when you're feeling good, that can swell. And then you start scoring in bunches and all of a sudden you look up and you got 50 goals in 50 games. Well, the opposite can be true. It's a streaky game. You miss a couple nets. You start pressing a little bit more. The power play is not clicking for you a few times. And that kind of snowballs. And it's a roller coaster. Being an NHL hockey player is a roller coaster. Connor is a freak of nature. You can't hold yourself to Connor's standards.
Yeah, but it's tough, though, when you look at those two and sometimes you feel like, well, look what's happening. Yeah, just a couple provinces over.
Same. You want to be considered the same, then some nights it's going to take a hat trick from you out of the blue. And I guess that's one of the things that they're missing right now is that superstar performance that basically turns a loss into a win.
Yeah.
We're 10 nights in and you're right. We haven't had that, oh my gosh, they're on fire moment, like in terms of scoring goals. Yeah. Well, you're right. It hasn't come yet.
Yeah, they got the opportunity Wednesday night against the, as you said, the hopefully tired Philadelphia Flyers. Luke, appreciate you joining us this morning, and we'll chat with you soon.
All right. Have a great day, guys. Thanks.
Luke Fox, our NHL reporter at Sportsnet.
We got to be quick here, but just one thing that seems to be coming up from our conversations. I think one of the big issues right now facing the Leafs is just a general ability to act and make decisions freely. Like he mentioned it with Matthews, the specter of the Matthews contract. Well, you got to make sure that he's happy. So does it cloud your decision-making? Does it change the things that you might do? Kyle Dubas, he got to create his roster. Was he free to spend first-round picks? Is he free to do this and that? I'm not really sure because he doesn't have a contract beyond this season. And then clearly, Sheldon Keefe can't do exactly what he wants because he's had to walk back comments on multiple occasions. It looks like he's massaging egos. Like, if no one can do what they need to do freely, if everyone is shackled in some way, then how can everyone do their job? And if everyone's not doing their job on a hockey team, how are you expected to win?
That's just like what Luke said about this is not just on Tavares, for example, to be a leader, which I do see some validity in that. I've played for teams where there's two different types of leaders. There's the lead by example and the vocal leader, but I think there needs to be a meshing of those two from someone that's wearing the C to not, you maybe step outside your comfort zone of being, the stoic leader, because that might even be more impactful. If he goes in there and he changes his tone and he says, I know, and Luke made a good point, we don't know what's happening behind closed doors or the meetings, but if I was on that bench or that locker room and a guy that's usually more quiet and reserved and a hard worker came in and absolutely tore into my team, or what was it with the garbage cans being knocked over from the from the call log I don't know, remember which I said that.
Lee,
that might
George.
Even George. That might even fire me up more to do something. But nonetheless, we're not there. We don't know what's happening. But outside perspective, the comments to the media is just, it's a bit too lackadaisical.
At some point, if something's clearly festering, then someone needs to do something about it. And maybe there have been attempts.
And it can't be David Kampf.
Well, it could be, I guess. But again, if, let's say Mitch Marner is not responding. Again, there's a bit of a speculative aspect to this. But if Mitch Marner is not responding to Sheldon Keefe, then maybe John Tavares needs to see if Mitch Marner will respond to John Tavares. I don't know. Again, we don't know exactly what's going on, but it feels like the authority thing with this team, who has authority, who's making decisions, why are decisions being made? It just doesn't seem like the people who should have the power are utilizing that power.
Couldn't agree more. We kind of won the Unibet Wake and Rake yesterday.
Speaking of power.
Power.
We hit a double void Wake and Rake parlay yesterday.
Maybe that's the balance that we need.
Win is a win.
A win is a win. We're going to get into the Wake and Rake presented by Unibet next. We have a couple futures to update you. Justin Cuthbert, the king of future betting,
has pinpointed
a few things that might interest you, pique your interest.
It's kind of an Austin Matthews discussion more than
there
anything.
There you go.
I just did it.
Yum, yum, yum. That's next on the Wake and Rake presented by Unibet on the Fan Morning Show.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of accuracy.
Show me the money!
With Ailish and Justin.
Massive win last night for the Wake and Rake. Don't let anybody tell you differently. You can't lose the Wake and Rake if you pick games that are postponed. Works for me. Or if a player decides not to play, hey.
I mean, you decrease the risk for sure.
You do.
So a small cash for us.
A small
shout
W.
out to the Raptors for covering. Closing line value we didn't get because the number moved when Freddie was announced as out. But Raptors cruise anyway. Yes. Cover minus 4.5. 30-point
win, we're good.
We're covering any number last night.
We certainly were. All right, so before we do today's Wake and Rake, as I mentioned, Justin, Futures King, picked out a couple things that might be interesting to our loyal listeners.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll do this once a month, but I think it's interesting to look at a couple awards because things have changed a little bit. And I think there are three markets that are particularly interesting, beginning with the Rocket Richard race. Now, the numbers will be different where you're looking, but at Unibet right now, the guy who was the favorite all along and who's won twice in a row, Austin Matthews, is now not the favorite. Shortest odds to win the Rocket Richard on Unibet belong to Connor McDavid, who has the lead, 9 goals, which paces the NHL, 6 more than Austin Matthews. Now, last year, there was a wonderful betting opportunity on Austin Matthews because he started slow and came back and won both the Rocket and Hart trophies based on that slow start. Mm-hmm. So this is something to monitor. I wouldn't like jump all over Matthews right now because I think you're waiting for something to change maybe. Like you got to see it first before you can believe that he can come all the way back. Not that he's down by too much right now, but he's still plus 260 and McDavid's plus 245. So there's not much of a difference. Basically, it's a coin flip between them, but McDavid does have a huge lead.
Mm-hmm.
And McDavid has huge leads across the board. He's minus 143 to win the Art Ross right now. If you look at the Hart Trophy, he is a plus 115 favorite. The next closest odds, plus 13.
This one's outstanding.
Plus 1,300. Like, McDavid is a runaway favorite across the board and now leads the Rocket Richard.
But like, it's 10 games in. Anything can happen.
Exactly. So you cannot. The thing with the futures market is you have to wait for there to be a favorite who suddenly is no guarantee to win. Right now, McDavid is a pretty much a lock to win all of these except the Rocket Richard, where he's basically co-favorites with Matthews. So you got to wait until something makes sense. But right now, the odds have shifted in the Rocket Richard race. And if you believe in Matthews turning things around and winning the award that he has owned the last few years, at least you get a better price on it now. The market that's the most interesting to me and remains that way is the Jack Adams Award. I mean, I could keep talking. I don't want to talk about it too much because I feel like I bring it out
You're obsessed
up a lot.
With the Jack Adams
but if you
Award.
Look, I swear, like, because it's one way where you can make money. The shortest odds right now, plus 1,100, which belong to Jared Bednar. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche have not had a good start to the season.
No.
There's no way he should be the favorite to win this award. But that just tells you that there's literally no, like, there's nothing to work on right now. It's just completely up in the air. And that's why you should keep an eye on it. But a couple names stand out to me.
Where's Don Granato in that?
He's moving up the board. Started at plus
man, those five, Buffalo Sabres are
plus
spicy.
5,000, and he's moved up to, it's actually not on Unibet right now. Last I saw was plus 2,800. But you've got guys like Bruce Cassidy, Jim Montgomery, hanging out with guys like Sheldon Keefe in like the plus 1,200, plus 1,400
man,
under
the
range.
Bruins, though.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Think about new coaches who are making a difference. Bruce Cassidy in Vegas, huge difference. That looks like a different team right now. Jim Montgomery in Boston. Like, it's obvious you could pick out a few of these right now that make all the sense in the world. If you just decided to bet a 3-pack of Montgomery, Cassidy, DeBoer in Dallas. Those are three teams that could potentially have big years compared to last year, and you give yourself a good position or a good chance to cash a ticket. So I think that's worth looking and monitoring what Cassidy and Montgomery's prices are when they return to Unibet. The last one that's interesting is the Calder Trophy. No one has staked any claim to it right now. No rookie is having like an outstanding start to their season, really, or at least one that would make you think, hey, we got to bet on this guy right now, or to even move the odds board. But I think one interesting name is Stuart Skinner from Edmonton. If he takes the place of Jack Campbell, if he puts up numbers like he has been doing, if he puts the Oilers in the best chance to win night after night, if he steals a bunch of those starts and has a great year, I think there's a chance Stuart Skinner right now at a long number is worth worth a little bit of a
what's
sprinkle.
The number?
At Unibet, I will have to pull it up in
first
one
of all,
second.
I've thought about Stuart Skinner for zero moments of my life. I'm glad you're bringing this to my attention.
He's plus 1,500. I wouldn't do that. But that shows you, like, he's sniffing around.
There.
He's sniffing
who's
around
a little bit. Who's the favorite right now?
The favorite remains Matty Beniers, who I think is at a decent start, but he's plus 2. Why would you ever bet on him at plus 250?
Where's Uri?
Uri's dropped.
A lot of the Canadians rookies are...
Uri's plus 2,700. So it's wide open. Rookie could just emerge and have a great year and win this award. But my pick was Owen Power, and he's plummeted to plus 1,500.
Yeah. All right.
So the two markets that are, like, not set already are the Calder and the Jack Adams. Mm-hmm. So keep an eye, and there might be a chance to make a decent profit in these two markets.
All right. I love that. I like the updates, you know, every month.
When I have something, I'll share it. I've got a little Montgomery. I've got a little Cassidy. I've got a little DeBoer because I think they're going to be all short of plus 1,000 within a month, I think.
Okay.
And they should not be priced the same as Sheldon Keefe. There's a 0% chance right now that Sheldon Keefe wins this award.
No.
Why would he be priced the same as those two? Doesn't make sense.
Don't tell Unibet that.
Let's get to the anchor submissions.
Okay, so we have no Toronto sports tonight for you, but we do have World Series postponed from yesterday to tonight, Game 3 in Philly. And we have NBA and NHL action to set up. So we got a lot of Wake and Rake submissions. We'll leave the MLB game to the end, but we'll go through a couple right now. So Matt from Niagara, still smiling from last night. And it's not from raiding my kids' candy bags, which I did, but rather off a 6-pick single game parlay on Monday Night Football. It was heavy on the Browns and Chubb props. So good for you, man. That was awesome. Where was that yesterday? I like the Tampa Bay puck line -1.5 at plus 147. Sens have lost 2 straight and Tampa is in the place to get right. Lightning have won last 7 of 10 from the Sens. It's a pretty good value on a puck line bet. Yeah. I have 2 puck line bets I like tonight, and that wasn't even one of them.
I think we only have 1 hockey pick from the listeners today, and that's a good one.
That's a great one. Appreciate that text in, Matt from Niagara. Okay, so we have 2 from NBA action here. Wake and Rake pick, Shea over on points. He's hit that almost every game this season. Or OKC on the money line over Orlando. Orlando is terrible, 1-6. OKC is 3-3 with Shea playing at an all-star level and at home. That's Jeg from Scarborough. You're a big Shea guy, so I'm sure you like that one.
Listen, it might be a spray the board night. Maybe I'll take that. I'll take Jeg up on his offer there.
Okay, Jeff and Barry with the other NBA selection tonight. I know you like the Wake and Rake anchor pick to be relevant to the game. Everyone will be watching. But if you want guaranteed money, take AD to make under in threes, which is at 0.5, to make no threes. He's not even going to take one, let alone hit one. He's making an effort to be a legitimate center, rebounds and paint scoring only.
Tell you what, I'm betting both of those. You're right. It's not going to be our anchor, but if you're that confident that he's not even going to take a shot from beyond the arc, I will play it.
I love that. Okay. Those are your picks from NBA and NHL. So we'll do some MLB now. Got quite a few of those.
We'll lay the anchor down here on World Series Game 3.
Yeah, I like that. Let's get back to basics for Wake and Rake. No runs in the first inning of today's World Series game. Also, your mom is going to be going nuts with the Warriors start so far. I totally agree. let's go with them to bounce back tonight versus Miami. Also,
basically a pick 'em, Warriors against Miami.
And no runs in the first inning. That was Ron on Twitter. Thanks,
so
Ron.
Ranger Suarez versus Lance McCullers. I'm
on a day of extra rest.
I'm very confident in Lance McCullers. Ranger Suarez has been really, really good early as well. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's a pitch count guy. You can't really rely on him to go too deep in the game. Maybe that's the pick.
Okay.
How do you feel about that one?
Good, but we have about eight more to read, so Okay. Pump the brakes. Avery Mississauga, let's try this again. Avery was our pick yesterday, I believe. I still like the over 7.5 in the baseball game. Suarez didn't do well versus Houston last time. I also like the under in the Rangers Flyers game, two elite goalies.
Oh, Carter Hart's elite now.
Carter Hart is elite.
Okay.
Let's keep going. McCullers over 4.5 strikeouts. He's got 6+ in both playoff starts this year. 5+ in the last 7 games. Overall, Big Mac put a code in for me.
Wow.
Official code for Big Mac.
Don't say what it is, though.
No, I can't.
Then there'll be controversy.
We'll see if the other Big Mac can figure out the code. Okay,
so two viable options here, the McCullers 4.5 or the Nerfy.
Okay, you didn't take my Nick Chubb anytime touchdown last night,
it was money. In the same game.
It was Monday. Money. Tonight, my best bet is McCullers over 15.5 outs. Have it at +105. He's underrated, and I think he'll do well enough to get 16 outs if Verlander got to 15. Cody and St. Catharines, ooh, I like that one.
I think I prefer the Ks.
Okay. We got one more from tonight's World Series. Yordan Alvarez over 1.5 bases is my best bet tonight. I'll also be playing just $5 on him over to get a home run. 2 for 3 with 2 doubles against Suarez and hammers lefties in general. Chad from Peterborough.
I think the over bases have killed us.
I don't even remember. Every MLB pick you pick kills us.
It's not me. I'm saying it's killed the listenership here. The over bases have been a bit of an issue. I think...
Sounds like everyone's big on McCullers tonight.
They can decide not to pitch to Yordan Alvarez, the Houston Astros' best hitter, mm-hmm. and then we're screwed. So
right.
I feel like it's just safer going with a pitcher who we know is going to be throwing, X amount of innings. You know what I mean?
Let's do it safer. If you like the strikeouts, then I like the strikeouts too. It's a little bit heavy, -150, whereas the outs is +117. But for looking for a win, it sounds like Big Mac, the official Big Mac apparently, has a lot of confidence.
McCullers has to be pretty dominant to get to 16 outs. He doesn't have to be that dominant to get 5 Ks.
Yeah, 4.5 is pretty low number. So let's do that then.
Okay, let's roll with the
official Big Mac.
Yeah, with code and all. McCullers over 4.5 Ks is the anchor. My pick is going to be the New Jersey Devils on the money line in Vancouver. The Devils have turned things around. The Devils look dangerous.
And we know how great the Vancouver Canucks are.
Vancouver's been better. We have to give them credit for that. They've turned things around to a slight degree. But I think the Devils are operating at a different level compared to them at the moment. Jesper Bratt continues to nip at the heels of one Connor McDavid in the Art Ross race. So I wonder what are the odds on that? I'll look that up while you deliver your pick.
Yeah.
But right now, I just trust in the Devils more than the Canucks, so I will take close to even money just to win the game outright.
I think that's justified. Okay, so I liked two puck lines tonight. First was the Calgary Flames over the Seattle Kraken at home, +112 on the puck line. Kraken have been a little bit surprisingly decent. Okay. But plus money on a puck line with the Calgary Flames, who are a pretty great team. I like that one a lot. And I also like the Florida Panthers on the puck line over the Arizona Coyotes in the Arizona Coyotes barn. Maybe there's a little bit of advantage for the home team, though, because of the visiting team's dressing rooms. But I think I'm going to just put the Panthers in my puck line. You made a good point during the break that the Calgary Flames might just be confident with like a 3-2 win.
Those are completely different teams.
Yep.
Calgary and Florida. One team is probably a little bit more likely to win 8-1, whereas the Flames are probably going to win more. I would say they're going to win more games by the end of the season, but they're going to do so in slightly more restrained fashion.
Yeah.
However, Calgary is at home compared to Florida. If they're all sulky about the dressing room, maybe they don't have a great effort. But either way, I feel like it's a decent bet.
Okay, so I'm going to put Panthers puck line in mind. So you have Devils on the money line. We have Panthers on the puck line. And McCullers over 4.5 strikeouts from Big Mac, the real Big Mac. Altogether, our Wake and Rake parlay on Unibet is +496 tonight. I also think, what a viewing experience tonight. Ducks and Sharks. 10:30 p.m. if you just want to stay up late and have your eyeballs burning? There you go. That's a fun one for you. Do you like any road dogs? I know I threw that on you last minute, but...
No road dogs, but I did find the Jesper Bratline.
Okay, give me that.
What do you think? What is he? Top 20, top 15, top 10? Like, where do you think he is in the Art Ross in terms of the shortest odds?
Top 15.
He's top 15 for sure. He's actually top 10. He's ninth. Okay. He's got shorter odds right now than Austin Matthews. Plus 1,700.
Yes, for Brat season.
I wouldn't be rushing to the betting window to make that bet, it tells you how reactive the market can be, because Jesper Bratt has never, ever been mentioned in the Art Ross race before, and all of a sudden he's top 10 and squashed between Sidney Crosby and Austin Matthews.
Hey, he's legendary like those two. All right, that was the Wake and Rake brought to you by Unibet. That was the Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish. Go get your discount Halloween candy today and your poppies and enjoy the start of Movember.
Stay portly.
Stay portly. Thanks for listening.